Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
So I've got Amy on the line. Amy, welcome to the show. What's your question?
Well, I have a question about what healthy sexuality looks like when a sex addict is in recovery.
One of the things we know about research and sex addicts is that they don't necessarily want sex with their own wife. And so to me, that says he's in really good recovery because he does want that with you. He has been 2 years sober. He has been in 3 facilities. And I suspect that's how he's wanting closeness with you.
You know, that's the interesting thing about sexuality is that everybody is different and every experience is different. Hi, I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets. You heard me sigh because it's been a hectic morning. And most oftentimes when you listen to the show, it's in the afternoon, but we are changing it up a little bit today, and I just feel so much gratitude to be here with you and to really help you find out the answers to what has happened. You know, I just got an email from someone. We'll call her Sandy. And Sandy said, "Hi, Carol. I've been married to a man for 4 years now, and we are really struggling. Throughout my marriage, there had been times when my husband had been in porn and masturbation, and I just found out that he is masturbating again, and this time we are wanting to get help so that our marriage can thrive. Should I be worried that he's not looking at pornography, but he is back to masturbating?" Now, she says, "I will add, as far as our sex life goes, we have sex about once a month. And actually, I feel that's good because I am not having to have sex frequently. And the reason that I feel that way is that I would not necessarily want to engage frequent sex because I don't 100% feel safe. I know for myself, as the wife, I have so many betrayal wounds and so many questions, and my heart just feels shut down. Carol, it's like putting my feelings and words together is becoming a real struggle. So the truth of the matter is, I appreciate you answering my questions in advance, and I can't wait to listen to your answers on the air." Well, it's interesting because we just did the sexuality intro, didn't we? And of course, she's going to be confused. When you thought you knew everything and you thought your husband was in good recovery, and then you find out that he started back on some old behaviors that he had agreed not to do, aka masturbation, it throws you back into that spiral of not feeling safe. And it sounds like they were having some sexual encounters, but it has thrown that back too. And so here's the deal. It is up to you as to whether you have sex or not with him. And if you need to modify it, modify the frequency until you feel safer, good for you. You're in the driver's seat now. You get to decide. And yet, I tell my partners that Masturbation is a very tricky subject. I mean, if you look at the programs that support sex addicts, you have SA, which says what you're doing is not objectifying women, it's lusting over women. It's a little bit more spiritually based, and it says, now that you've determined that you're a sex addict, you can never, ever masturbate again. And they believe that because they feel like the brain has been contaminated and euphoric recall would occur again. If somebody masturbated and they didn't look at porn, it really doesn't matter because that pornography is in their head, and that will activate that euphoric recall, and that's why masturbation is seen by Sexaholics Anonymous, SA, as not being good. Now, SAA, Sex Addicts Anonymous, says you get to customize your program, especially for you. So a lot of the men that I see or that come into my group, they have masturbation as a healthy behavior. Now, when I first got trained as a CSAT, a Certified Sex Addictions Therapist, I tried to be porn neutral. I really felt like whatever they worked into their program was their, certainly their prerogative. To tell you, I have changed that dramatically because I now have figured out that there's no way one can masturbate. I'm kind of like the Sexaholics Anonymous group. It is impossible. And, you know, I will have men that say, well, I think of my wife. And I say, yes, I bet you do. But you can't do that 100% of the time. So, for Sandy, I want to say, Sandy, you do have concerns because he said that he was going to put that in his inner circle behavior, and then he started doing that again. And I really didn't get the idea. I wasn't able to tell. You said, I just found out. Well, I didn't know if he shared that with you, which, of course, would be the better scenario, or if you discovered it. But it's important that you two get together on what he is doing and why. And, you know, I would encourage you to see a certified sex addiction therapist who's also APSATS trained. And there are several of us in the organization, because he might be slipping or relapsing again. That being said, this is your radio show. This is your podcast, and this is for partners to figure out what's going on in their life they need to do to be empowered. And that is why I am so excited to be interviewing Joanna Rapsmith, who works on empowering partners in her own practice. You know, she knows what kinds of struggles that you go through, whether it's sex addiction, infidelity, or betrayal. And you've been disempowered when that happens. And so she wants to talk today about bringing that balance back into your life so that you feel more safety and security. And she's going to be sharing some steps that she and her clients have created to bring back that sense of empowerment and control. So I am so excited that we've got Joanna on the line. I know you may be hiding out from the kids, Joanna. Are you doing well?
I am. Thank you so much. It's so good to be here.
Well, it is good to have you, and I just really love it when we do shows on empowering partners, because the truth of the matter is that we want to get them to that third phase of partner betrayal, which is post-traumatic growth. So
yeah.
Can you share with me, how has your own experience experience as a partner informs your work as a therapist?
Absolutely. So my husband and I went through discovery and recovery from sex addiction and betrayal quite a few years ago. And when we were going through recovery, there were quite a few really good resources for him as the betrayer to kind of understand his journey, find healing. There was very limited resources for me as the partner, though, and almost nothing for the couple. And so I found myself struggling to get connected to therapists who understood my journey. There were no support groups in my area, so I ended up starting my own, not fully knowing what I was doing at the time, and ended up going to a fairly well-known intensive, one of the few intensives for partners at the time. And in that experience was labeled as codependent, a co-addict, was told very early on in our journey that I needed to look at my own history or what I brought into the relationship that had contributed. And it did not feel like it fit me at all, and was actually pretty painful to go through that experience at that time. And I knew this isn't right, this isn't fitting. And so I kind of dedicated my recovery to figuring out my own experience, and through that found the trauma model, started to find resources that felt safe for me, that felt healing for me. And so through that experience, got really passionate about learning those tools myself so I can be a voice that speaks into partners going through this journey who still will hear really toxic messages about their part or the relationship from therapists who don't understand, from pastors, from friends and family. And so it's just really exciting for me to be able to have a voice in their life and their journey that hopefully feels safe and feels healing for them.
Well, I know that partners really appreciate when their therapist or their coach has been a partner and has gotten to the other side of empowerment. And you actually contributed to the field before you knew exactly what you were doing. It was kind of that build it and they will come.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
So can you tell me, what are some common myths that partners buy into that holds them back on their progress and their empowerment?
Yes, absolutely. So, you know, one of the first ones is kind of the feeling that I shouldn't have to do anything because I didn't cause this. And it absolutely makes sense that that would be an easy one to buy into because it does feel really imbalanced. It does feel really unfair when I understand the healthy view of weight. That acting out, that betrayal is fully his responsibility. That is really important to understand because a lot of times partners are told, no, you had a part in it. So being able to separate and say, no, I didn't have a part in the hurt that was caused, but I do have a part or responsibility in healing what was done to me. And sometimes I'll use the analogy of, you know, if someone hits you on the road, a hit and run driver, that is fully their fault, their responsibility, and you have to do the hard work of healing those injuries, those wounds that were done to you. You have to go to the doctor. You have to show up and do the physical therapy exercises, whatever you and your body need for healing, only you are able to do that work. And so for partners to understand, you know, your role in healing yourself is so important, and I want them to value that. I want them to have the support and the resources that they need, not because you've had any part in causing this pain or this problem, but I want you to be fully empowered to heal those wounds and not be dependent on anyone externally for that. And a lot of times it's tempting to be dependent on that person that's caused those wounds, but they oftentimes don't have the internal capability to show up in really healthy ways for the partner, especially in the beginning. And so helping them understand how they can be empowered to create that safety, to start that healing journey, and not have to wait for their catch up and do their own healing work so they can start showing up in a healthy way. Another one that I hear a lot from partners is this kind of internal struggle of feeling like I don't have a say in my spouse's recovery. That has to be just fully his road, his journey, and kind of connected to that is kind of an understanding around boundaries. I think a lot of people in general in our culture have a really negative view of boundaries, fearing that they'll create distance or resentment, or they always look like ultimatums. And so helping them understand, you know, you are still in a relationship, right? If you've chosen to stay in that relationship, if you guys are trying to work on that, you have your own individual work and journey, but those are always connected to the relationship because you never step out of that space. So helping them understand how those can be connected and how they can actually fuel each other, right? I always say that individual journey recovery shouldn't be hurting the relational healing and vice versa. And if they feel like they are, we need to look at those. And so learning to have really good open communication about what's working, what's helping in that spouse's recovery to heal the relationship or encourage your healing, and being able to have a voice when it's not, and being able to be assertive and speak up when it's not in a way that controls or dictates what that other person's recovery looks like, but that's really honest to where you are at. And so that includes that kind of practice of learning how to create and set really healthy boundaries that feel balanced, but also create that safety or protection that you need in the process.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And you and I both know that that first phase in ACTSATS talks about safety and stabilization. So that's what mm-hmm. we're always looking for with mm-hmm. our clients. Now,
yes.
What do you think? I was just referencing an email that I got where a woman was saying that her husband had started masturbating again, and she wondered where I stood on that issue and mm-hmm. what I thought about that. And mm-hmm. there are so many different theories out there, not just about masturbation, but about whether partners should know the recovery mm-hmm. of their spouses. And we both mm-hmm. know what ACTSATS thinks, but I'm wondering, you know, in terms of your own philosophy, mm-hmm. do you believe the partner should have a say in their spouse's recovery?
Yes, so absolutely. And I think, you know, when you think of other parts of relationships, it's easy to understand how having that say or that openness and honesty is vitally important for the safety in a relationship. If you've talked about parenting or finances, the idea that I would hide any of that from my spouse or I'd engage in activities around that that makes my spouse uncomfortable, that would clearly be an issue. But for some reason, you know, it's a lot easier to section off this kind of sexual recovery part and feel like, well, this is isolated to this person. It doesn't have to interfere with the relationship. And so kind of really compartmentalizing that part of your life, which is never going to be healthy for healthy intimacy. And so our kind of understanding of healing the relationship or what a healthy relationship is, it starts with openness, transparency, full honesty. And so if there's any part of your life that is hidden from your spouse, you're starting to crack that foundation. And so being able to say, okay, well, no matter what that behavior is, we have to start with openness and honesty. And then getting to the actual behavior, this actually comes up so much with couples about, we use the three circle model a lot. And so that inner circle, that, you know, the sobriety behavior is often a question for the coupleship. And so being able to say, okay, there's lots of different viewpoints on the health of masturbation or pornography and people's sexuality, and especially as you get outside of the sex addiction field with professionals, that can vary drastically. And so a lot of times we come back to the relationship and say, okay, anytime there's a behavior that is breaking down the safety of the relationship, we have to question it. We have to say, is this really healthy for your coupleship, for your usness? And I have yet to have a couple that together have agreed that either pornography or masturbation is a really healthy part of the relationship. And a lot of that comes from the healing journey of relearning what healthy sexuality is as a couple. And most of our couples see it as something that helps nurture the relationship, that helps you show up and be generous and giving of yourself to the other person. And masturbation does not fit within that value category. And so there's so many different ways to talk with clients or couples about how they decide together what they want the structure of their relationship to look like moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. And we definitely have been trained out of the same mold, and that can be so confusing because partners do hear so many conflicting messages. You know, their only support may be Essanon, which is a wonderful, wonderful group. It's a 12-step group. But they still do not believe that she should have a say in his recovery. That needs to be solely his own. And you and I both know that that's not going to improve the relationship. That that certainly gives 100% responsibility to be accountable. But I find that addicts need their partner's input. And their partners are able to show how a behavior really may not be working for them. Now, how much recovery time do you have, Joanna?
How much what?
Recovery time do you have? I mean, when was discovery for you?
Yes, it was about 8 years ago now.
Okay, so you've had a lot of time to figure this out. And when did you get trained with AFSAC?
I got trained, let's see, about 2015.
Yeah, and you know that really you need at least 2 to 3 years in this field, in addition to whatever personal experience you have, to really see what works in a partner's life. And so what made you decide, I am going to help partners to feel empowered and take control of their own personal healing? I mean, that sounds like it's a mission for you.
Yes, it's, you know, it's so funny. It wasn't so clear a mission to me until my partner started naming it. and more often, their spouses. I kind of started being known as the therapist that was going to empower their wives. And so they would get a little nervous when their wives would start seeing me. And so I started to realize, And so as I started working with clients, I realized that that is a passion and that is so close to my heart. And I think, like I said, a little bit in my own journey, that was so important for me to feel safe and for me to feel sane in my own mind and my own body. You know, as I was finding resources that didn't fit or didn't feel healthy, it made me feel more unsafe, more out of control. And as I started to gain awareness of the real impact it had on me and what I could do to kind of heal from that and move out of that, it really gave me a sense of security. And so that has always shaped my work with partners, really empowering them through awareness and insight, both of their husband's journey, what healthy recovery looks like for him, so they can feel really confident when they step in to have a say in his recovery. So empowering them in that way, and then also empowering them in their own body to kind of really trust their gut and trust their intuition again. I think one of the hardest parts for partners is to think about moving forward in the relationship or even in other relationships, and that fear of, well, how will I know if this is happening to me again? I didn't know the first time, so now I feel like I can't trust myself. And so helping them feel that kind of self-confidence and the ability to trust themselves I think is one of the biggest gifts in the healing process, healing journey for partners.
Well, I absolutely agree. And, you know, the truth of the matter is one of the toughest things for partners to work through and work out is their own emotion regulation. And mm-hmm. for anybody out there maybe new to this field and to partner betrayal, emotion regulation is all the feelings that you're being flooded with as you mm-hmm. go through discovery and maybe get mm-hmm. a disclosure, hope you do, mm-hmm. if you want it.
Mm-hmm.
And then as mm-hmm. you work through your own betrayal, all the things that have happened to you, if he slips or slides or relapses, it can throw you back into that emotional flooding again. So
yeah.
I'm going to ask you, Joanna, what do you advise partners to do to get that sense of I've got some control over my emotions?
Yes, absolutely. So this is one of the keys to feeling really safe in your own body, feeling empowered, and one that sometimes the hardest because for most of us, we didn't have a great ability to emotionally regulate already. We aren't taught that in schools or, you know, growing up very often. And so it really is a new process. And then you add on the trauma of betrayal, and trauma just makes that increasingly harder to self-regulate. And so one of the first things we do is address that trauma, right, and help them understand the impact that trauma has and also screen for previous traumas because those are just going to add up in their body and make that even more difficult to learn how to self-regulate. And sometimes we'll do EMDR or some type of specific trauma reprocessing therapies around that to kind of help with that specifically. And then we also do a lot of grounding techniques to help them learn how to just physically regulate their body, their heart rate, their breathing, how to learn to slow down what's happening in their body. And a lot of that is first gaining awareness of what is happening in my body. Some people have a really good body awareness, mind-body connection. Other people have never done anything like that before. So it's kind of learning that connection, creating that connection, and then learning the tools they can use to help slow down, regulate the physical reaction. And then after that, we move into kind of a little bit deeper work of understanding what are the negative cognitions or the emotions that are getting triggered underneath that trauma reaction or emotional dysregulation, and how do I start to change how I believe about those? How do I start to choose what I'm going to believe about myself and not give away my power to other people or to my spouse that really is going to control then my emotions and my actions? And so it's about taking back that control or that power and saying, okay, my identity, my ability to regulate is not going to be dependent on anyone outside of me. And that's especially important when that person has demonstrated that they are not honest, not safe, not reliable. That's the last person you want to depend on for your safety, your emotional regulation, your self-identity. And so learning to kind of shift that back into themselves, trusting themselves again, allows them to feel that sense of safety and empowerment. That doesn't mean that it will never hurt again if their spouse is not getting help or struggling to get sober, but it won't cause that kind of control feeling that I think so many partners have, which really is scary for them when they are out of control of so much, maybe externally, to feel also out of control internally. Is just not a very safe place. So bringing that back to them, that ability, teaching them how to do that is so important.
Yeah, and you really, you know, you have a lot of tools for partners as to how to do that. I want to remind people that if they want to take a look at your website, it's www.renovatelove.com, and talking to mm-hmm. Joanna Rapsis. And you can contact her directly by going to info@Joanna, J-O-A-N-N-A, Rabsmith, RAABSMITH.com. Now, you were talking about how important boundaries were earlier, and can you give our partners some examples of boundaries to help them to heal?
Yes, absolutely. There are, you know, sometimes I'll help clients understand, you know, there are kind of personal boundaries that I have full control over, and then there are relational boundaries or expectations. Sometimes I'll even use the word structure because, like I said, boundaries so often conjure up this idea of a wall and make them think, oh, this is going to separate me and my spouse in the relationship, rather than this is going to create a safe structure for our relationship to heal in. And so often partners are going to have a better awareness of what healthy boundaries are in the beginning of recovery. And that's the whole reason they're in that place, because their spouse did not have good, healthy boundaries for themselves. And so they often initiate or lead the way in creating healthy boundaries. But we really want, as much as possible, if they're moving towards healing the relationship, for them to work together to create that structure for the relationship. But there can be very practical boundaries in the beginning, around physical touch, around electronic use, around, you know, whenever we're separated, do I know where you're at? How do you confirm? And it's a lot of creating some structure that allow words and actions to match, right? We really want to create a structure where there is lots of openness, lots of honesty. So if it's that relational structure, it's how does that betraying spouse name what they're going to do and then demonstrate how they can show up reliably in doing that. And so depending on what the acting out behaviors are, those boundaries can look really different. And so that, you know, like you mentioned before around full disclosure, well, I always hope that that is something the couple can go through quickly, because that gives a lot of insight around what types of boundaries need to be created to create safety for that relationship. And then there are those more specific boundaries for the partner. And I always say, think emotionally, relationally, physically, sexually, spiritually. Are there areas in your life or your relationship that need to start to look different for you to feel safe? And sometimes that may be physical distance, saying, I don't want physical affection or touch right now. I may need you to sleep in a different room to create that physical safety. It may be that emotional distance. You know, one of the things we talked pretty early on about are kind of regular check-ins to create emotional openness and honesty, but that partner may not be ready for that yet, or may not be ready to be open themselves, and so may be in balance for a bit, saying, okay, I need openness from my spouse so I can start to trust, but I'm not ready to be vulnerable in that way yet. And so it's really just walking through those different categories and saying, okay, how do I feel safe showing up in my relationship in this area right now? And then also I like to talk about, and what do I need to see or experience to feel safe opening up this boundary, right? So especially, again, if they're pursuing healing that relationship, we want them to be identifying, okay, what boundaries do we want to go away or change as we gain safety and move towards intimacy? For a lot of couples, those boundaries end up being a really healing place in the relationship, and they say, we don't ever want to go back there, right? So for a lot of couples who maybe, if social media was a triggering area, they said, okay, we're going to get rid of social media, or we're going to decrease the use of our cell phones when we're with each other. They realize, wait, this opens up so much more opportunities for us to be present with each other, for us to connect. And I say, this isn't a boundary that's going to separate us. This is actually something that brings us closer together. And so I always want to reframe boundaries as, this is what is going to create safety, which creates the opportunity for healing. And if that's in the relationship, the healing and growth of intimacy, if that's on your own, just the healing of your own pain, your own trauma, and that empowerment of bringing safety into your life.
And, you know, again, if a woman is with a man who is doing a good recovery program, I always say, wow, those guys are healthier than 85% of men out there, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're turning and they're praying and they're getting fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So I have a lot of hope for couples that are working together to make her feel safe and to do recovery, as well as, obviously, sobriety recovery. And what do you tell partners whose spouses can't seem to change, won't get the help, or don't want to be told what to do?
Yes, absolutely. Those are some of the hardest spaces to work, because often there is repeat trauma in those relationships, repeat hiding, lying, betraying, those continued acting out behaviors that are so damaging to that spouse. And the partners I work with in those relationships are all across the board in terms of, you know, what they want to do with that relationship. Some of them absolutely want to stay and continue to hope in that healing of that relationship, and others say, no, I can't do it, and step out. But no matter who I'm working with, you know, I want them to turn the work and focus on themselves and their healing and their self-care and their wholeness, to believe that that does not depend on their spouse and what their spouse chooses. And as they gain that awareness or that insight or start healing, they gain the awareness of what they need and what boundaries they need relationally, what they need. You know, they find their voice again. They're able to speak their needs, be assertive, find ways to meet those needs on their own. And then there's often a period of helping them grieve what is either what has happened to them in the relationship, grieving the end of that relationship, or grieving that ongoing kind of pain that is going on in the relationship that very naturally starts to create distance, you know, is going to decrease that connection if they are protecting themselves from that. And so being able to also then create, you know, what is their hope for themselves? What is their vision for themselves? What do they want moving forward in their life? And so there's still a lot of steps in that process. But really being able to help them find that sense of self apart from that betraying spouse, apart from that kind of lack of recovery on the other side.
Yeah, absolutely. Very well said. And, you know, as I listen to you speak, I can tell that you're very motivated and inspired. And I always say inspired means to be in spirit with yourself, with your higher power, with God, whatever you refer to it. So as we begin to wrap up, I want to know, what do you believe has inspired you most in your work?
Yes, absolutely. So I am just blown away every time I work with a partner, and I do a lot of trauma work in general, and a lot of that trauma is with partners of betrayal. And I am always amazed by their strength, their hope, and their resilience. They are some of the strongest people that I have met. They're some of the most hopeful, even in the face of really tough. Often partners come in having done some recovery work, not having good resources, and so maybe already having years of painful recovery, coming in still saying, it's not working, but I trust, I believe we can get this right. I believe that there are resources that can help me. I'm not going to give up. And so just that hope, that resilience of consistently getting up and showing up for themselves is so incredibly inspiring. And really, you know, even in the face of often friends and family who are against their journey or have lots of opinions on what they should be doing or shouldn't be doing, that maybe are not feeling like they fit for that partner, you know, them continuing to seek out and get the help that they need or the resources they need. And just the beauty of that healing journey is so incredible. The pain, the ashes that they have been through into kind of that beautiful, strong, resilient person that was always there, right? I always tell them, that's inside of you. You're just letting it come out. You're just getting to know that part of you more. And so, you know, it never ceases to amaze me when that happens. And I feel so, so honored to be a part of that journey for people. It really, you know, my faith is in God. And I say every time I see it, I feel like I see a real life miracle happening when I see that healing after such pain. And so that's absolutely what keeps me in this work and excited about my work with partners.
Oh boy, I understand that, and I can hear it in your voice. Again, I am talking with Joanna Rapsmith, and you can reach her by going to her website, www.renovatelove.com, or emailing her at info@joannarapsmith.com. Joanna, thank you so much for giving partners hope that they can get through this with the help of people like yourself who understand partner betrayal.
Absolutely. It was so, so wonderful to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And we'll talk to you soon.
Wonderful. Take care.
You too. All right. You know, she told me, she goes, I may have to get in the closet to be able to talk to everybody, but she was clear as a bell. I love that. So thanks for joining us. I hope that inspired you to know you can get through this. And the truth of the matter is you can, but you have to seek partner-sensitive therapists and coaches that know how to work with you best. And that's through APSATS.org.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.